It was a close call. We had storms here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains today, and this filthy, degenerate AT&T, with whom we have to do business, insisted that the fact that we did not have internet connection was not my problem. I guess when you're trying to handle a problem and you're in Mumbai, India, and your client is in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's a little difficult. Well, to make a long, stupid story short, we, Kathy managed to pull it together here at the last minute. So here we are! God, I hate AT&T. Wasn't the Bell system broken up years ago, antitrust this or something, and then they got back together? It's kind of like, the oil companies. Weren't they broken up, the, Standard Oil Trust back in 1902 or something? Speaking of oil companies, we talked last night about a piece that Jason Leopold had at truthout.org and also at his website, pubrecord.org, about the oil companies, executives with oil companies and Dick Cheney getting together to plot the invasion and occupation and destruction of Iraq with the sole purpose of being able to seize the oil reserves there. And, you know, I was thinking about that today. I had a couple of people email me and say, well, you know, that news has been out there. And, oh, yeah, I can remember when the organization, what was the organization, Kathy? Not Public Citizen, but the one run by the crazy guy down in they got the maps and everything released. It really doesn't matter. But when all that information came out a few years back, and I was shocked that we weren't all shocked. You know what I'm saying? It was just like, okay, the Vice President of the United States and oil company representatives planned an invasion of another country and then sold it to the American public as a national security issue. Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman, that's right. You know, just a nest of right-wing freaks, but every once in a while they turn up something that matters. But when Judicial Watch got through a Freedom of Information Act, I believe, got the maps of Iraq released that showed how they were going to carve up the oil companies, were going to carve up the oil reserves, the known oil reserves. And I remember thinking at the time, Jesus, God, I mean, what more do we need to indict, to impeach and try and remove from office Dick Cheney and then indict the son of a bitch and the meat puppet, you know, George W. What else was needed? There it was, but nothing happened. So what Jason Leopold did was to piece together that information, other information that's dribbled out in little dribs and drabs. Oh, and don't worry, I'm getting ready to get down on the Obama administration hard. But this has to do with this filthy, corrupt Bush-Cheney criminal enterprise that ran this country for 8 years. My God. But what Jason Leopold did was to pull all of this stuff together and some new information, try to put it in coherent form, instead of having to go to this website or that newspaper or go to Mother Jones. Okay, now pick up another piece of the Nation. Okay, here's a little bit at the Washington Post. All right, here's another little tad over the New York Times. Leopold put it all together. And I was thinking about that today. Christ almighty. I mean, as bad as it was when it was occurring, here this compendium of the criminal activity just around that one issue, Dick Cheney's so-called energy task force, while the bastards were sitting in there plotting a war. And what did I do about it today? After going through that last night, what did I do about it today? Nothing. Not a thing. I didn't even write to, well, my excuse is, look, I live in Georgia. Who in the hell am I going to write to where it concerns senators or representatives? Ah, yeah, we got two Democrat representatives down there. Yawn, so down here. So what? Who am I going to write to? Who am I going to complain to? Who are you going to complain to? Huh? What are you going to do with it? I can just imagine how Leopold must feel. He puts this story together. I was thinking about this today. He puts this together, puts it out there. Thud. Nobody cares. I'm not happy with that. I really, really am not happy with that. Karl Rove got deposed. Was it today? All these secret little sons of bitches just running around Washington, D.C. about like roaches, like cockroaches. Where's the story? I don't even have the story, do I? I don't think I even have the story. It's just, there's no story. Harriet Myers was deposed back in June. Anybody know about it? Anybody hear about it? Huh? No, nothing, you know. All right, the other thing we were talking about last night was the war criminal Robert McNamara, who died in his sleep, the son of a bitch, at age 93. On Monday, was it Monday? And how unjust and unfair and unkarmic that seems. Somebody wrote me and said, well, what did you want? He suffered a lot the last few years of his life once he came out of his fog of war. Yeah, okay. No, he didn't suffer. He didn't suffer at all. But I got an email here from Ward in Japan that I want to share with you. Mike, Bob McNamara got an early start. Most people think of Vietnam when his name is mentioned, and rightfully so. But here in Japan, he is remembered for helping that bloodthirsty madman, Curtis LeMay, who was General Jack D. Ripper in the movie Dr. Strangelove. Curtis LeMay help firebomb Japanese cities, almost all of them of any size, killing as many as 100,000 people in a single night. Old men, the young ones were away at war, women and children, Bob McNamara and General Curtis LeMay. While living in Hawaii for some 30 years, I met several people who lived through those times in Japan. Ward writes, I once met a Japanese Buddhist minister who survived a firebombing when he was a child. I have known many Buddhist ministers, actually, since I was chairperson of Buddhist education for a time for Hawaii's largest Buddhist sect. Anyway, during the war, this minister had been sent from Kyoto by his parents to live with his grandparents in a smaller town, Fukui, in hopes that he would avoid being bombed. It was not to be. Ironically, thanks to American anthropologists, Kyoto was spared bombing due to its historic cultural importance. Not so Fukui. The firebombs, well, let me share this with you when we come back, because you need to know this. I need to know this. You know, I read in today's New York Times a couple of apologias for Robert McNamara now. As if Bob Herbert's column the other day was a little bit too hard on this filthy bastard. So the New York Times, I guess, felt compelled to put out a column or two supporting the, not the innocence of Robert McNamara, but the fact of, well, you know, when you're doing what your president has ordered you to do, you should be cut some slack. We didn't do that at the Nuremberg trials, but apparently we're different from the people who went on trial at Nuremberg. I'm going to continue this letter from Ward in Japan when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Take a look around to see what do I see. Looking like the world's gone just a little crazy. And I look at me, all of them, and it's just not me. Yeah. So I guess I'm going, just a little crazy. I said, I guess I'm going just a little crazy. I said, I guess I'm.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM, compact crossover segment excludes other GM vehicles. Two past the hour. All right. This letter from Ward in Japan, who listens via the internet to the program, he's talking about Robert McNamara and how McNamara got his start. This war criminal son of a bitch. We talked about last night because he croaked. He died in his sleep. And as Ward points out, McNamara got his start working with General Curtis LeMay, a real bloodthirsty, crazy person, in the firebombing of Japanese cities during World War II. Ward tells us about a friend of his, a Japanese Buddhist minister, who survived a firebombing when he was a child. He was sent by his parents from Kyoto to a smaller town, Fukui, in order to avoid being bombed. But as Ward writes, it was not to be. Kyoto was spared bombing due to its historic cultural importance, thanks to American anthropologists, but not so Fukui. The firebombs used, Ward writes, were large hexagonal-shaped cluster bombs, which were a 500-pound bundle of 38 smaller hexagonal bomblets, each with streamers used as parachutes on one end to keep them pointed downward and to make them drift and spread apart. They were filled with a TNT detonator, magnesium, and napalm. The TNT spread the napalm up to 100 feet to coat buildings, walls, and people and set them afire. And then the magnesium burned everything white hot. If you want to know more about this, Google M69 incendiary. M69 incendiary. Ward writes, they were used not to destroy munitions factories, oil refineries, ships, or military units, but rather in the last months of a war which Japan had already lost on the battlefields and on the high seas. They were used to wipe out cities. Cities filled with civilians too old or too young to fight, mothers, little girls. This was referred to as strategic bombing by General Curtis LeMay and Robert McNamara. One night, the air raid sirens sounded, and firebombs began to fall over the residential area where the Buddhist minister was staying. The minister said that his grandfather took him and the other children from a school, and they ran down the street trying to escape the flames that were already engulfing part of the town. One of the bomblets floated down nearby, and a man, seeing the children, ran out from his house and tried to catch the bomblet. He wrapped his arms around it as he yelled for the children to run under the eaves of the tiled roof of his house for protection. The minister told me that he can never blot out the horrible scene in his memory of that man holding that bomblet, staggering, falling, and dying in an explosion of flames, saving the lives of others. Captain Robert McNamara was General Curtis LeMay's statistician. His job was to coldly calculate the effectiveness of the bombings. Coldly, like a goddamn reptile. In McNamara's own words, quote, LeMay said that if we'd lost the war, we'd all have been prosecuted as war criminals, and I think he's right. He, and I say I, were behaving as war criminals. End quote. That is from Fog of War. Plus, there's a list of Japanese cities destroyed compared with similar cities in the USA for perspective. Fukui, where the minister I met lived as a child, is on the list. 86% destroyed. At the time, a city the size of Evansville, Indiana. Yeah, of course, I always think of Vietnam when I read the name Robert McNamara, but I will also forever remember that minister who witnessed McNamara's work firsthand in Fukui, Japan. There is no God, and Buddhists offer wisdom and compassion, not what we call justice, whatever that means, as if there could be anything which would balance the suffering of the victims of war and make them whole again. No, only the wisdom to understand the truth and the compassion to heal its consequences are available to us. To expect justice is to chase rainbows, in my view. Yet I cannot help but feel bitter at the peaceful passing of such a monster as Robert McNamara. This, too, the Buddha knew. To top it off, I saw another war criminal in the news today, a corpulent, smiling, 86-year-old Henry Kissinger. He was approvingly calling President Obama a chess player in regard to international relations. Chess. Another game of cold calculation. And guess who are the pawns? Ward, Japan. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Oh, 25 before the hour, Afghanistan. Afghanistan. Oh, my God. We lost 7 soldiers dead there in the past couple of days. Big story in the New York Times today about Afghanistan, which I'm going to get to here in a second. Email from Reg says, our goal, as it was in Iraq, is to get people in countries we invade to kill one another in as great a number as possible. For the moment, we can't seem to convince enough Afghans to kill one another. We'll get around that problem by paying tribal leaders to kill their own countrymen and women. It seems to have worked pretty well in Iraq, so what the hell? Let's go for it again. Now, for those of you who are very familiar with the situation that we faced in Vietnam, the longest war in U.S. history, You remember, that's exactly what we were involved in. Getting people in that country to kill their countrymen. Well, we've done that so many times. But the article in today's New York Times that Reg is referring to is our commanders in Afghanistan now. And here we are again. See, here we go again. Barack Obama, President Obama, you. Hello. Okay, never mind. Here we go again. And our top commanders in Afghanistan are concerned because there aren't any Afghan forces that are willing to fight on our side. Our side. What are we doing there? We're bringing freedom and justice and democracy and peace and love and kindness and stopping the subhuman treatment of women in that country. I was trying to say subjecting the women in that country to the horrors that they put up with because of this fundamentalist religious horse snot. I guess. I don't know why we're in Afghanistan. Do you? From the Times today, Richard Oppel writes, a week after several battalions of Marines swept through the Helmand River Valley, military commanders appear increasingly concerned about the lack of Afghan forces in the field. Nobody wants to help us to liberate their country from what? Brigadier General Larry Nicholson, who is commander of the Marine Expeditionary Brigade in Helmand Province, said, quote, what I need is more Afghans, end quote. He was there with our top commander in Afghanistan, General Stanley McChrystal. We've talked about him many times, McChrystal. This is the kind of man that you want, General McChrystal, when you've decided that it's time to go kill people. Do it quickly, efficiently, and with nobody watching. These two generals were together during a visit with troops at Patrol Base Jaker on Monday, near Nawa, Afghanistan. General Nicholson and others say that the long-term success of the operation hinges on the performance of the Afghan security forces, which will have to take over eventually from the American troops. You know what? 10, 12, 15, 20 years down the road, huh? General Nicholson said the American force of almost 4,000 had been joined by about 400 effective Afghan soldiers. The general said, quote, the net increase in Afghan security forces is zero, end quote, since the brigade arrived a few months ago. The lack of Afghan forces, according to Captain Brian Heisman, commander of Company C, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines in Nawa, the lack of Afghan forces, quote, is absolutely our Achilles heel, end quote, said Captain Heisman. Captain Heisman said the Afghan forces were critically important in establishing trust and communication with citizens. Hearts and minds. It's all very familiar, isn't it, huh? Captain Heisman said, quote, we can't read these people. We're different. They're not going to tell us the truth. We'll never get to build and transition unless we have the Afghans, end quote. Build and transition, that's the military jargon for the last phase of an operation, whether it's an entire war or an operation as this one is in a certain part of the country that we've invaded. NATO forces said yesterday that three foreign soldiers, two Canadians and a Briton, had died in a helicopter crash on Monday, which is already the deadliest day for American forces in Afghanistan nearly a year. Seven U.S. soldiers killed Monday. Six in bomb explosions, one in a firefight. General McChrystal emphasized that the operation going on right now needed to show the local people quickly that they had more to gain from life without the Taliban than with them. The general said the military got a lot of fanfare during the initial push last week and now has to deliver on its promises, that military being mostly us. McChrystal said, quote, militarily, You can control areas, but sociologically, if you don't control them, you're not going to be able to do what we need to do here. End quote. And General Nicholson added that the operation has a, quote, narrow window of opportunity, end quote. In a month, he said, the people will say, well, yeah, you came in and chased the Taliban away, but how's my life better? How's your presence benefiting me and my family? You know, it's really madness, isn't it? So we're not getting the cooperation. We can't seem to get, now it's Afghanistan, we can't seem to get Afghans to kill Afghans. Apparently the dumb bastards just don't understand who's the bad guy. We understand who the bad guys are. But the Afghans, the majority of them just don't get it. What are they, stupid? They live in those little brick houses and smoke opium all day? Is that what it is? Are you stupid? Don't you? We have top flight generals over there who are going to tell you who you're supposed to hate and kill. God damn it. What's wrong with you people? What's wrong with these people? Well, I'll tell you what. There's nothing wrong with them. What's wrong with us is what this is all about. Reg also told me about a book out. The authors are Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould. They have documented the reality of Afghanistan since the Carter days, back when the Soviet Union invaded and Jimmy Carter pulled us out of the 1980 Olympics. Remember that in protest? 1979, 30 years ago. The book is titled Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. Now, it's a must-read. I've got no interest, a financial interest in this book, and neither does Reggie over at TVNewsLies.org. Nothing. But if you want to understand how the corporate media have kept Americans totally ignorant of the real history of Afghanistan, and as Reg writes, the tragic role of the Brits, the Russians, and the U.S. in trying to control this country, then you need to read this book. Now, these two authors, Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald, are also filmmakers. But if you want to understand, and you need to do this, you've got to do this. I did it earlier today. You got to go to this website, invisiblehistory.com. That's all, invisiblehistory.com. So that you can begin to understand the futility, Reg writes, and ugliness of our presence in Afghanistan today. InvisibleHistory.com. It's astonishing to me that we're doing this again, that the former head of U.S. forces in Afghanistan was cashiered. He was removed, and General McChrystal has taken command. McChrystal, who is known throughout the ranks, so the rumors go, as someone who advocates the use of fiery torture anytime it's necessary. Torture the son of a bitch until you get the right answer. Who's the type of guy who works special ops, who will unleash some of his people to go in and commit assassinations. This is Dick Cheney's assassination squad guy. Murder people because they're in the way. In the way of what? And we can't get the Afghans to cooperate. Son of a bitch. You know, what is it? What is it with the people in the countries we invade, like Vietnam? We just couldn't seem to get the villagers to cooperate with us. They would cooperate with the Viet Cong. So what did we do to the villagers who wouldn't cooperate? Well, we'd come in and declare their towns, their villages, their huts a free fire zone and burn the sons of bitches. Right?
Cry no more.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA-estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. About 10 before the hour. Now, I also want to get this in about Michael Jackson. I got an email from Daryl in Las Vegas who writes, Mike, I'm not sure how to start this off because I have a lot on my mind. For starters, I'm a podcast subscriber and agree with you on about 95% of most of the things you talk about. I'm not a fan of Michael Jackson, but was very knowledgeable of his contributions to society. I can agree that he received a lot of coverage, but not every coverage of the media was positive. Even on his memorial, Fox News ripped into Michael, both Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. What bothers me most is that I am hearing left-wing hosts, progressive emails and callers that almost sounding like Fox News, but not as nasty. As an African-American, I see the double standard in America. A black man in this country is still guilty, despite our legal system saying he's not guilty. Although, when Ronald Reagan, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, or John Lennon passes, their coverage is limited to no scrutiny. Michael was more than just a great artist and dancer, which many white people want to limit him to. To blacks, Jackson had come a mighty long way that not many other African Americans have ever experienced. We're always proud to see our own move one step forward, being that we have always been so far back. But Jackson not only broke through color barriers, he also contributed millions of dollars to humanitarian needs. He put millions into building children's hospitals and limited the increasing numbers of Africans affected by AIDS and helping many black programs and colleges that did not have major contributors. Now, when I think about it, some of those contributions are a far greater reason to want to tear him down. What's the difference between what Michael Jackson has done and what Cynthia McKinney, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, was trying to do for the Palestinians? Jackson was in the Guinness Book of Records for supporting the most charity organizations. Michael Jackson's songs were not just about feel-good bubblegum pop music, but he touched also on many of the topics that we have discussed on this show. He has videos displaying bombs killing innocent people in Kuwait and Vietnam, or the famous Tiananmen Square scene, and he has consistently created songs exposing the hate and the crimes that have gone on in America and throughout other parts of the world. Michael's one of the most liberal performers on the pop scene. But we're too busy focusing on him getting in bed with children, which, according to the verdict, he never sexually abused, or for not being like us. I didn't mean to rant on this long, but I think we should just keep Michael Jackson's name silent, being that some of us don't know how to honor what good he's done. Again, I'm not a fanatic of Michael Jackson's, but I believe in giving credit where it's due. We are still quick to judge man by his color rather than the content of his character. And yes, despite his bleached skin, he was still a black man. Michael Jackson will forever live on. Now, let's go back into the wilderness. From your podcast subscriber, Daryl, in Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, I appreciate it, Daryl. I hope that you understand that I complained about the wall-to-wall coverage, but I had nothing negative to say about Michael Jackson, not about him, his family, his music, his performances, the way he mutilated his body to try to escape from his blackness, which is exactly what he did, for whatever reason. The insanity of his having children with Deborah Rowe, if that's really what happened, I just left it alone. I just left it alone. I would rather focus on the other death that occurred within the past 10 days, and that is Robert McNamara, who is a criminal, a murderer, a killer. Michael Jackson, I understand what you're saying, Daryl. I do. And it's not my intent, and I did not put anything negative out there about him. I talked about the insane coverage of a man who is a pop star. And you're right, he's multidimensional. He wasn't just somebody who, excuse me, who knew how to sell tens of millions of records. He wasn't just someone who was able to break through certain barriers as a black entertainer. I understand. I do. It was, a lot more than that. And I'm not trying to be patronizing or condescending to your email either. I mean, I do understand. I do. That Michael Jackson was more than a performer. Excuse me. As far as the charges against him of pedophilia, I had a problem with that when it first came out. My first inclination was not because he was a black man, but because he was an adult who seemed to be preoccupied with children. I had some problems with that, but the jury spoke, and no charges were filed. And also it came out in trial testimony, the nature of the people, of the family that filed the charges against him. They were certainly more interested in money than they were in any kind of perceived justice. I understand. So, just for the record, I had nothing negative to say about him. Any criticism I had was the coverage. Well, this country is going through what it's going through. And a matter of fact, I think I said the other night, maybe we need something like the death of Michael Jackson, not the death, but the focus on the death of Michael Jackson to take us away from some of this other stuff. All right, Daryl, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. All right. We'll be back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for sticking around or tuning in. Whatever you've done, thank you for doing it. Glad you're here. Do become a podcast subscriber if you can. We ask you to go to MikeMalloy.com. The information is there. If you do it on a yearly basis, it'll cost you $59.40. I think it's $7.95 a month. On a yearly basis, it works out to 25 cents a program. And your support that way would be appreciated. This Obama administration is starting to... I'll tell you what it's starting to do. Some of the decisions that are being made are starting to make me angry. In a way different from the anger I felt for 8 years with Bush Cheney. Maybe you feel the same way. That anger was visceral. It was gut level. It was explosive. It was more like rage than anger. Matter of fact, remember we talked about this, I don't know, a year and a half ago about rage fatigue? Remember that show? That was pure, unbridled rage. The anger I'm starting to feel about Obama is the kind of angry you feel when you feel betrayed. When you feel like a family member has betrayed you, or a lover has betrayed you, or a close friend has betrayed you. It's more personal with Obama. That's the problem. And I think a lot of people, a lot of Democrats are starting to feel that way, a lot of progressives, the sense of betrayal. And there's always anger that comes on the heels of betrayal. You know, it could be summed up in one phrase. How could you? Right? You know how that works. Have you ever been betrayed by a friend or a spouse, a lover, whatever? And that, for, you know, how could you? How could you do that to me? Right? Isn't that what you say? How could you do that to me? What you're really saying is, why did you choose to make me hurt this badly? Right? You know, come on. We've all been there. So that's what I'm feeling about Obama. You know, I wish I could sit down with him for a few minutes and just say, how could you do this? How could you allow us to paint on your canvas? You knew what we were doing. You didn't do anything to stop it. You let us. You were a blank slate. You didn't make any promises. You're right. You didn't. Your position on certain issues was crystal clear, though, wasn't it? Huh? Didn't you state categorically certain points of view about the Military Commissions Act, about the, what else? About habeas corpus, about detention without charges or trials, closing Guantanamo, yada, 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 just on and on. Didn't you take a pretty big stand, Mr. President, on human rights issues or legal rights, civil rights? Didn't you? You did. And, of course, you left enough wiggle room for us to rush in and color in all those spaces between what you were saying and the outlines of the picture that you were drawing. So I guess we have ourselves to blame. And that's why it feels like betrayal, you see. That's why it feels like a family member, a good friend, or a lover who has lied to you, cheated on you, betrayed you. Because we understand, don't we, that in those kinds of situations, we're partly at fault. With Bush and Cheney, we had nothing to do with it. We had a couple of Nazis who had decided to absolutely goddamn destroy the country. And they did a good job of it, too, didn't they? Huh? Didn't they? This is different. This is betrayal. The latest... The Obama administration has let it be known that it may keep terrorism detainees, and you better put quotes around the word terrorism, even if they're brought to trial and are acquitted. Now, how does that grab you? Even if they're brought to trial and acquitted. Oh, I know what the sick, perverted rationale behind that. Well, you know, we probably can't provide all the evidence needed to convict them because, you know, state secrets and stuff, you know. So, if they're found not guilty, if they're acquitted of the charges against them, the Obama administration now is saying they may keep them in prison anyway. Now, this is worse than preventive detention. This is worse than having extra time tacked on to a sentence because the judge feels like a prick and decides on the day that you're sentenced to add extra time just because you pissed him off in his courtroom. This is different. This is saying, okay, we're going to make available to you our legal system. And if you're found not guilty, it doesn't matter. We're going to keep you in jail. What? What? Chief Department of Defense lawyer Jay Johnson told a Senate committee yesterday, quote, that releasing a detainee who has been tried and found not guilty was a policy decision officials would make based on their estimate of whether the prisoner posed a future threat, end quote. That's according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. I guess what they're saying is, look, we inherited this mess. Some of these people have been held for 7 years with no charges. They have been abused. They've been mocked. They've been belittled. Some of them have been tortured. If they're brought to trial and found not guilty and we release them, they're going to be so pissed off that they may just decide to pick up a bomb and blow up a building in the United States. That, I guess, is what this guy, Jay Johnson, chief Department of Defense lawyer, was telling a Senate committee yesterday. I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, that doesn't wash. The reporter, the Wall Street Journal, notes that the Bush administration maintained the same stance. But, in the words of the reporter, the legality of that stance was never tested. Spencer Ackerman of the Washington Independent characterizes Johnson, the chief Department of Defense lawyer, Johnson's responses as moving the Obama administration, quote, into new territory from a civil liberties perspective, end quote. New territory? No, it's old territory. You want to read about it? You can read some of it in To Kill a Mockingbird, which was fictional, sort of, based on a true story. You can look at the history of this country, various people who were denied legal rights. And when a mockery or a sham trial was held and the defendant was found not guilty, all of a sudden the White Citizens Council would show up before the prisoner could be released and drag the prisoner to the nearest square where there was a tall tree and hanged him. Is that too broad a statement? Am I taking this too far? No. Hell no. The Obama administration is saying it may keep people in prison even after they have been acquitted, even after they have been found not guilty. The Obama administration may keep them in prison. Spencer Ackerman wrote, quote, asked by Senator Mel Martinez, Republican of Florida, the politically difficult but entirely fair question about whether terrorism detainees acquitted in courts could be released in the United States, Chief Department of Defense lawyer Jay Johnson said that, quote, as a matter of legal authority, the administration's powers to detain someone under the law of war don't expire for a detainee after he's acquitted in court, end quote. Ah, the administration's powers to detain someone under the law of war. The law of war? What would that be, Mr. Johnson? What is this law of war that you're referring to? Are you talking about the laws of war that we've been violating for the past 7 years? Those laws of war? Is that what you're talking about? You're going to invoke them now? These people are starting to make me angry. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles in a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Yeah, 21 past the hour. So the Obama administration said Tuesday it may keep terrorism detainees even after they have been acquitted, that according to testimony before a Senate committee from Chief Department of Defense lawyer Jay Johnson, who said that releasing a detainee who has been tried and found not guilty was a policy decision officials would make based on their estimate of whether the prisoner posed a future threat. Mel Martinez, Republican of Florida, Senator, asked the question about whether terrorism detainees acquitted in courts could be released in the United States. Johnson said that it's a matter of legal authority. The administration's powers to detain someone under the law of war don't expire for a detainee after he's acquitted in court. It's according to Spencer Ackerman, writing at the Washington Independent. And as I mentioned right before the break, the law of war. What law of war are they talking about? Are they talking about the law of war? Are they talking about the Geneva Conventions that the United States has absolutely shredded? Are they talking about human rights conventions that we have withdrawn from? What the hell are they talking about? What are these guys talking about? Or this guy? Johnson went on to say, if you have authority under the law of war to detain someone under a Supreme Court ruling, that is true irrespective of what happens on the prosecution side. End quote. So Mel Martinez said, so the prosecution is moot? And Johnson said, no, not in my judgment. Well, then what are you saying? If the prosecution isn't moot, when someone is found guilty, they're not guilty, they're released. Johnson also indicated that Guantanamo might remain open after January 2010. Johnson said, quote, you can't prosecute some significant subset of 220 people before January. So you bring them here and you put them in prison and you afford them the rights under our Constitution and you bring them one at a time to trial. What has that got to do with the fact that you can't prosecute 220 people between now and January? What's that got to do with closing Guantanamo, Mr. Barack Obama administration spokesman? What the hell are you talking about? It's starting to taste and stink like betrayal. And, you know, as George Bush so famously said, fool me once. Oh, never mind. You know. Now, there's a breaking story that's getting some coverage here that I want to share with you. According to the Associated Press, this is coming out like right now, CIA Director Leon Panetta, in fact, told Congress last month that senior CIA officials have concealed significant actions and misled lawmakers repeatedly since 2001. Misled means lied. Now, remember what Nancy Pelosi said, I was lied to. And remember how these rapacious, filthy sons of bitches that are Republicans jumped on it? Remember? Remember how every right-wing radio talk show host immediately jumped on it? Remember? Huh? Okay, well, here it is. Panetta told Congress last month, on June 24th, Panetta appeared before the House Intelligence Committee. Closed session. But the chairman of that committee, Sylvester Reyes, Democrat of Texas, said the CIA outright lied. So they have decided to release a letter. A letter was released today, tonight. Reyes wrote in a letter to Michigan Representative Peter Hoekstra, the committee's senior Republican, and a copy of the letter was obtained by the Associated Press. In the letter it said, quote, these notifications have led me to conclude that this committee has been misled, has not been provided full and complete notifications, and at least one case was affirmatively lied to, end quote. Ray said in the letter to the senior Republican that he is considering launching a full investigation. Panetta, now don't forget who Panetta works for. Right. CIA spokesman George Little said this evening, quote, it is not the policy or practice of the CIA to mislead Congress. You know, those are weasel words. That's the same thing Panetta said. Come on, give me a break. It's not my policy it's not my policy or my practice, me, Mike Malloy, to develop an acute case of cramping diarrhea. It just isn't. But you know what? If I eat the wrong stuff or drink the wrong stuff, you know, that's going to happen. But it's not my policy. It's not my practice. What the hell does, you know, what does this mean? All right, more on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
He lies and he lies and he lies. He just lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time. He can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him. They're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies and he lies and he lies.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. So, what we're talking about here, there is some breaking news out here. The head of the House Intelligence Committee has sent a letter to the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. The letter, a copy of that letter was obtained by the Associated Press, and now it's out here for all of us to talk about. The letter is written by Sylvester Reyes, the committee's chairman, Democrat, from Texas, addressed to Michigan Representative Peter Hoekstra, who is the committee's senior Republican. And it says the CIA outright lied to House Intelligence and probably Senate Intelligence, the committee members, too. This is not a surprise. I remember when this story came out on the Pelosi issue. Remember what we talked about? Like, you know, I disagree with the 99.9% of the way Pelosi has conducted herself since becoming Speaker of the House. But she's right on this one. Of course, the CIA lies. That's what they are supposed to do. And who do they lie to? They lie to the American public, period, repeatedly, without let up. The rest of the world, whether the intelligence operation is run in Russia or Israel or South Korea or Great Britain or Canada or Japan or Venezuela or Cuba, they know that the CIA lies to the American people. They know the truth. How could they not? But we, once again, are so used to being damn fools and willfully ignorant, we just sit back. Oh, and then, of course, the right-wing media in this country chews on the ass of anyone who dares challenge the idea that the CIA works for the American people. No, the CIA doesn't. The CIA works and always has worked for corporate America. Period. Surely you get that by now. So when Nancy Pelosi says, yeah, I was lied to, they didn't tell me this, and the right wing protection racket that is run by Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these bastards, when they immediately go after Nancy Pelosi, that's what they are paid millions and millions and millions of dollars to do. To keep the truth from you and me. Television is designed to make you forget. Talk radio is designed to absolutely scramble your brain so you don't know which way is up. Jesus Christ. Ray said in the letter he's considering launching a full investigation. Now, according to CIA spokesman George Little today, he said, well, Director Panetta brought the matter to the committee's attention. What? Little said in a statement to the Associated Press after the AP called him and said, we got this letter. And CIA spokesman Little said, quote, "It is not the policy or practice of the CIA to mislead Congress. This agency and this director believe it is vital to keep the Congress fully and currently informed. Director Panetta's actions back that up. It was the CIA itself that took the initiative to notify the oversight committees," end quote. You bastards. you bastards. The AP goes on. Seven Democratic members of the House Intelligence Committee sent a letter to Panetta on June 26 asking that in light of his disclosure that he revise a statement he made in May to CIA employees that it was not CIA policy or practice to mislead Congress. Whoops. Well, that's what Mr. Little just said today. The cryptic letter, the one from Sylvester Reyes to Peter Hoekstra, the cryptic letter and the CIA statement, the one by this moron, George Little, who absolutely understands what his job is. His job is to perpetrate the lies, to perpetuate the lies, to continue the lies, to treat the American public with as much disdain and condescension as possible, because he doesn't work for us. There is nobody in the CIA who works for us. Nobody. In fact, they probably don't even work for Obama, unless Obama has completely gone over to the dark side. You'll pardon any reference to a pun there. Panetta said, I should say, seven Democratic members of the House Intelligence Committee sent a letter to Panetta on June 26 asking that in light of his disclosure, he revise a statement he made in May to CIA employees that it was not CIA policy or practice to mislead Congress. The cryptic letter and CIA statement came on the eve of a House debate on an intelligence bill. That's tomorrow. This debate is expected to revive a partisan argument. Partisan argument that has raged on and off for months about whether House Speaker Nancy Pelosi knew in the fall of 2002 about the CIA's use of waterboarding weeks earlier. Now, when that aspect of the story broke, I took the position of no, hell no, she didn't know it. Nobody knew it. Give me a break. That was the cover story. Oh, maybe, what was the guy's name? The former representative from Florida who wound up heading the CIA for Bush for a while. He probably knew, but Pelosi didn't know. Congressional aides expect much of the debate on the House intelligence bill tomorrow to be diverted into a discussion of what Pelosi knew about the CIA's harsh interrogation program and why, if she was briefed on it, she didn't formally object to it. Pelosi told reporters in May she had not been informed that the form of torture known as waterboarding had been used against terrorism suspects, even though it had been. When asked whether she was accusing the CIA of lying to her, she said yes. And, of course, the Republicans seized on that the CIA misled Congress. And the Republicans and the protection racket that is right-wing talk radio said that Pelosi's remarks have demoralized the intelligence community. Oh, goddamn, I'm going to throw up all over this microphone. Oh, Nancy Pelosi demoralized the intelligence community. Oh! And then House Republicans did what House Republicans are paid to do. Every one of them. An absolute slave of corporate America. House Republicans demanded that a bipartisan panel investigate Pelosi, led by the protection racket that is right-wing talk radio. You see how this works? Representative Rush Holt, Democrat of New Jersey, one of the authors of this letter to Panetta that the AP got their hands on, said the June revelation to the committee bolsters Pelosi's case. Well, no kidding. Holt told the Associated Press, quote, if people are saying, heaven forbid the speaker said the CIA deceived Congress, anyone who has served any time on these committees and is straightforward will say, well, yes, of course. End quote. Now, here it comes. House Republicans oppose at least one provision in the intelligence authorization bill, and they have an unusual ally, Barack Obama. Obama's aides have said they will recommend he veto the bill if it includes a Democratic written provision requiring the president to notify the intelligence committees in their entirety about covert CIA activities. Under current law, you see, the president's only obligated to notify the top Democratic and Republican leaders of the House and Senate and senior Democratic and Republican leaders of each chamber's intelligence committee, which obviously they goddamn have not done ever. So the Obama administration wants a provision included that says, no, I don't have to tell you anything. I don't have to let you know anything. No. And if you pass it, the Obama administration is saying, if you pass this new intelligence bill that says, I, the president, have to notify the intelligence committees in their entirety about covert CIA activities, then I will goddamn veto it.
Uh-oh.
The Democrats want to open the briefings to all members of the House and Senate intelligence committees when these types of briefings are required. They claim that the Bush crime family sought to undermine congressional oversight. Oh, really? Not just the Bush crime family, boys? Come on. For once in your filthy lives, be honest. It wasn't just the Bush crime family. It was also the Clinton crime family. It was the Bush 1 crime family. And it was the Reagan crime family. Come on! Just once, be honest. However, the Barack Obama White House is concerned that briefing more lawmakers might compromise the most sensitive U.S. intelligence operations. What could they be? What could those operations be? Think about it for a second. Watch me walk. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles in the tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Open your eyes, time to wake up. It's about 10 before the hour. So the so Leon Panetta now is apparently went before the House Intelligence Committee about 2 weeks ago, and all kinds of hell is a popping now, right? It's this is just astonishing stuff. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. Anyone out there in crazy land, which is where we all live, who believes that the CIA has anything whatsoever to do with truth is delusional. It's just goddamn delusional. The CIA has never been about truth. Never. It has been about establishing parameters within which corporate America could kill and maim and attack and invade as it saw fit. Now, it's not stated that way, obviously, but the Central Intelligence Agency is a subversive terrorist organization. Who disagrees with that? You want proof? You want proof? You really insist on it. Goddamn Malloy, listen to him. All right, let me toss it back to you. You send me an email, Truth Seeker. I don't care who you are, what your political affiliation is, and you tell me one single operation that you know about, or your member of Congress, or your House member, or your Senate, anything that's a matter of public record, anything where the CIA was effective in being an intelligence gathering operation.
I hear you. That's impossible, Mike. Well, if we were to know, then, well, it doesn't work that way. You see, you don't know. You might be dead right now, Malloy, except for a successful operation that stopped a bunch of terrorists from attacking the hills of the North Georgia Mountains.
Oh, really? So it looks like Pelosi was right. And, you know, I usually don't say garbage like this because I have certainly don't lack confidence in what I say. If I say something on a program and somebody emails me and says, bing, you got that ass backwards. Here's the truth. You know, and I check it out. Yeah, I'll come right back on the air or come back the next night and say, whoops, sorry, mea culpa, got it wrong. But on the Nancy Pelosi thing, I'm going to claim what I said at the time, that Pelosi was right. The CIA is a goddamn terrorist organization that will do anything to lie. Anything. It always has. But it is the function of mainstream media to keep that from you and me. And it is the function of right-wing talk radio, which is 98% of talk radio, to provide protection. Right-wing talk radio is a protection racket. Provide protection to corporate America as it rapes and loots and pillages and burns and bombs and destroys and then sucks up whatever's left over, sends in Kellogg, Brown and Root or Exxon Mobil or the defense industry contractors. It doesn't make any difference. So now Barack Obama administration is betraying me. And you? You feel betrayed too? Do you? Do you feel betrayed? Got two emails here, one from Tony and one from Jim correcting me about Michael Jackson wanting to be white. People have this misconception. Tony writes that Jackson bleached his skin in order to be more white, when in fact that could be. I think he means that could not be further from the truth. Documented proof from Michael Jackson's dermatologist that he had a procedure completed to depigment his skin in order to create one color rather than the spotted skin that appeared all over his body. In fact, he started wearing the famous glove when spots developed on his hand, or to cover up. Michael Jackson publicly stated on numerous occasions that he was a proud black man. This information needs to get out so that people will stop criticizing him for something they're ignorant about. With regard to his nose, he also publicly stated his father and brothers continuously made fun of the size of his nose all through his youth relentlessly. A young person growing up with that kind of constant verbal abuse can have serious psychological issues about that particular issue, his nose in this case. He saw a large nose every time he looked in the mirror and felt all throughout adulthood that he needed to do something about it. If there's any blame to go around, it belongs to his father, Tony. And from Jim, according to his dermatologist, Jackson suffered from vitiligo, which is the loss of pigmentation in the skin. This isn't that uncommon in blacks. The doctor claimed that Jackson didn't bleach his skin. I've known people with vitiligo. It can be devastating to blacks. I'm not a Jackson supporter, just a supporter of the facts. Okay. Thanks, guys. Whoa. Why did he have his lips permanently made red? And why did he have permanent eyeshadow dug into his lower eyelashes? Now, I'm not trying to be a smartass with you, but do you really think that all of the cosmetic surgery Michael Jackson had was to... because his father and brothers made fun of him and because he had vitiligo? Or do you think maybe it had something to do with the persona that he was trying to put out there for public consumption? Do you think? Or was it all just about a skin disease? Red lips, permanently made red, and tattooed or whatever the hell it was under his eyes to give him permanent eyeshadow. He must have had Some lip disease, maybe? Bah, I'm being a smartass. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Let me just clue everybody in. If you come on the program, I do not want to talk about any aspect of Michael Jackson. His life, his death, his music, his funeral, his memorial service, nothing. That's not what this program's about. And the only reason I brought this up was because I got a couple of emails from people. And in fairness, you know, also now I've gotten a couple of emails from people with vitiligo who say horse snot. You know, you don't bleach out your entire body. Now, I'm not going to go there, okay? So if you're calling in to talk about Michael Jackson, don't. All right? I'm serious. I'm not trying to be a nasty ass. That's just not what this program's about. I hope you will respect that, okay? Email from also from Reg regarding Gitmo. And also, who else wrote in about this too? Kathy in Green Bay. Reg writes, if the prisoners at Gitmo have not been charged with any crime in all these years, what makes anyone think there will be any legitimate charges made against these men ever? Everything is insane. Everything, everywhere. Keeping the prison open and keeping prisoners imprisoned despite their acquittal are political ploys to counter the GOP maniacs who will use the mantra that terrorists are being allowed on U.S. soil as a campaign slogan in the next elections. Business as usual. Business as usual. Well, is that what my president, my wonderful Barack Obama, has now been reduced to? Kathy in Green Bay writes, if the power to detain people doesn't end when someone's acquitted, then why in the hell have a trial? So that the detainees can print I'm not guilty on their holiday or Christmas or Kwanzaa cards? Of what use is a not guilty verdict to a detainee if his or her status remains detainee? Doesn't that negate the entire purpose of a trial? Of all the idiotic cuss, talk about your show trials. Kathy Turner. This is even worse than the show trials, though, that were held in the Soviet Union. It really is, because those trials involved the public confessions of people regarding their crimes against the glorious state of communist Soviet, the Soviet Union. Yes, beat me, flay me, make me do hard labor. I'm so sorry. I carried a poster that criticized Uncle Joe. I tried to organize workers in a factory. And rather than, of course, being sent to a labor camp, that was reserved for the poets and the painters, These people on the show trials were taken out in a yard in the Kremlin and executed immediately after the trial. Just a couple of bullets in the back of the head, and it's over with. You don't have to mess with it anymore. Here, you're guilty. Keeping people after they have been found not guilty. The Obama administration is considering that. And then the second thing, this breaking news tonight, and you got to wonder why it's coming out tonight on the eve of the hearings before the House Intelligence Committee tonight. It's my understanding, Michael Isikoff at Newsweek magazine is saying that the Obama administration has vowed to veto any new intelligence bill that contains within it something that Pelosi and a couple of the 20 or 30 other Democrats want in it. And that is what I mentioned before the break, that any future briefings by the CIA be conducted before the entire intelligence committees of the House or the Senate, not just the chairperson and the ranking member. And the Obama administration has categorically stated now, clearly, if it comes to the president with that provision in it, he will veto it. I don't know about you, but are you starting to, have you ever had surgery? Huh? I've only had two surgeries in my life. The first one, I was 12 and I had my tonsils out. And the only reason I consider that surgery, because back then they put you under. Well, maybe not. All I remember is they put a needle in my arm and told me to count backwards. But then 7 years ago, I had about 90% of my thyroid whacked out because it had a tumor in it. Well, it wasn't a tumor. What was it? Nodule. It was a nodule. That's different from a tumor. But that was general anesthesia. And if you ever had surgery, you know what, you know, you start to come out of it, you come out and you don't come out. All I remember is being in the emergency room, or not the recovery room, and a nurse saying, "Hey, it wasn't cancer. Congratulations, it wasn't cancer." Okay. But I'm starting to have that feeling again of coming out of surgery or going in. Going in was wonderful. When they give you that stuff, you're sitting in that pre-op room waiting for your turn on the assembly line. The technician comes over and says, "Okay, here." And you just kind of sit there. And what I did was sing some night when we have less important things to talk about. I'm sure Kathy will tell you about that. But that's how I'm starting to feel. That feeling you get when you're coming out of surgery. Or coming out from the ether, or the whatever, you know what I'm saying, the anesthesia. And it's like, am I dead? Am I alive? What is this? Where am I? Is this real? Is this not real? And you're not afraid. I mean, it's just like everything is just jello, you know. It's just, you're absolutely not afraid. It's just, and it's miserable, and then you start throwing up. But that, you know, that's what this is starting to feel like with the Obama administration. It to me. Is it to you? I mean, how many, and isn't it amazing, all of these issues that seem to be throwing me a curveball, how about you, are issues around legal rights, constitutional rights, human rights, secrecy. And again, please, who is the Obama administration, like the Bush administration and the Clinton administration and on and on and on? Who are these secrets being kept from? Anyone who believes that MI5 or Mossad or KGB, whatever the hell it's called now, or the Canadian intelligence, anyone who thinks that these intelligence agencies don't know every time Barack Obama farts are kidding themselves. Who are these these secrets being developed to keep from?
Why, you and me.
And why would that be? Because the CIA is a terrorist organization. That's why. Do you doubt that? I'm waiting for an argument against it. Can anyone, anybody, present an argument on this program or in an email that refutes the idea that the CIA is a terrorist organization? By anyone's definition. It doesn't have to be George Bush's definition. Anyone's definition. Well, like a lawyer never asks someone on trial a question the lawyer doesn't already know the answer to, I will guarantee goddamn to you that I'm not tossing that out there because I think you can do it. We'll be back after the break. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles in a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Past the hour. Man, I am concerned. Are you concerned, Truth Seeker? An email here from someone that says, check out the real estate values in southern Brazil. We will try to have some sound for you on the program tomorrow night from the House Intelligence Committee hearings. I say try because Kathy, who produces this program, is on jury duty, and she is doing a murder trial where the accused, or let me put it this way, the person accused is accused of murdering and dismembering his roommate, two men. And Kathy saw the pictures yesterday. The body was carved into 11 pieces, nine pieces, excuse me. The head was gone, and the vital organs had been removed, and the cutting was done not where you would consider cutting to be done. For example, like they would do it on The Sopranos, you know, at the shoulder, at the elbow, at the wrist, at the knees. No. The cutting was done through bone. And, oh, and then the body was partially burned. No, you can't say anything. No, don't you?
It was sort of like William Wallace in Braveheart. Like, what else could you do to
okay,
it?
Okay, now, you don't want to wind up in contempt here. So it's been very interesting having Kathy on this jury all this week. Molly has forgotten what mommy looks like because she's gone. She's gone from 8:30 in the morning until about 6 in the evening, and that's crunch time for the kid. That's supper and bath and stories and, you know, off to bed.
And then if it's a lucky, lucky day for mommy, like today, I promised my little girl I'd come home and we'd make M&M chocolate chip cookies. Yeah. This is what I've been looking forward to all day. But no, mommy got to get on the phone with AT&T for another 2.5 hours to try to get our internet restored. So it's been a real fun day for mommy. No cookies for us.
I think I
need some sleep.
I think Kathy is on the verge of a complete break from reality. You know, think about it. You spend all day looking at dismembered body parts and listening to the testimony about how the body was hacked up. And the
That's better than talking to AT&T for doing it if I were given the choice.
And then you come home and your kid is going, but mommy, where have you been? And then you have to, and then your husband says, listen, I can't seem to log on here. And, the next 2.5 or 3 hours, Kathy is on with AT&T and Linksys and everybody.
Mommy needs a cocktail.
Yeah, mommy needs something. Woo. So that's why tomorrow evening there may or may not be some juicy, and it's going to be juicy. We know that, we will be, recording it all day long, but whether or not Kathy, as the producer of the program, has a chance, we need an intern. We need somebody to come and work with us in the evenings who will do it just absolutely cheaply or free.
They'd run screaming. The first time I had to call AT&T. And also, AT&T will have a lot to do with whether or not there is sound on the show tomorrow night. That's not only the trial. There's 4 or 5 components that have to go into whether or not we have audio from the hearing.
You know, the electricity here in the studio is starting to vibrate just a little bit. Let's say we take a break here pretty quickly, okay? She's smiling, but she still has the... She still has a weapon close at hand. I have to say, Kathy, I could not sit there and listen and watch the defendant who is accused of carving this person up into 9 easy pieces, and listen to this and come home and deal with cookies and AT&T and this program. There is no way in hell. I would probably stand up in the jury box, and this would be great for the defense because it would be a total mistrial. But as soon as I saw those pictures, I'd probably stand up and say something untoward insofar as the trial is concerned. All right, your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. It is 25 before the hour. Michael is calling from the Bronx in New York. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okie dokie. First off, Kathy, you are so lucky to be on jury duty because I love jury duty. But, Mike, you feel like laughing?
Sure.
Yeah, because Sarah Palin's become the biggest joke of the week. She turned around and complained that the media is being unfair to her. Oh, the media is being my family. They're always bad-mouthing me. Well, who the hell is the one that keeps showcasing the family into the media spotlight, coming up with so many fabrications, one after another after another? And then the other thing she says, I'm quitting, but I'm not a quitter. You know, I don't know why she keeps claiming that the media is being unfair to her when she puts this all on herself. She ought to know when she comes on the air with lying about something, somebody's going to catch her. And it's going to expose her. So,
well, you know, Michael, I was just going to say, I've got my take on Sarah Palin is simply this. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? I just don't care. It was comic relief watching the other war criminal, John McCain, and Sarah Palin spin the Republican attempt to... stay in the White House, right into the sewer. She absolutely freaks me out. The fact that any television camera or any reporter or any commentator cares now anything about what she said. She had her 15 minutes when the religious right selected her to run with John McCain in order to sink McCain's campaign. That was the whole plan. She did her job. She didn't realize that was her job. She's just blissfully ignorant. She and her husband want the money now. They don't want to sit on their asses up in Alaska where there's, you know, nothing unless you want to go out and butcher salmon or turkeys or moose or whatever. But anyway, Sarah Palin to me is a footnote in the Republican political history. A comedic footnote, and I guess, Michael, I'm getting to the point with her that I got to with the Michael Jackson coverage. I just, except for occasionally commenting on some of her half-assed remarks, I just, you know, don't want to go there. I'm sure you understand. Nora is calling from Minneapolis. Nora, welcome to the... Hi.
Hi, Mike. I wanted to ask you about Afghanistan, because tonight, for one thing, I had to see on C-SPAN Representative Rohrabach, a Republican from California, talking about how enthusiastically and proudly he served with the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union for the Russian people. And now my question is, now didn't the U.S., first of all, starting 1980, and the USSR was going into Afghanistan, and U.S. put in probably billions of dollars through the ISI, created the Taliban, and they were with the Pashtun tribes fighting against the Soviet Union, and then finally knocked them out, and they were had some in the northern helping them. So then we went away for a while. Then it was 9/11, and we went back and switched to the other side and killed off a whole bunch of people working against the Taliban with the Northern Alliance against the Taliban and the Pashtun tribes who they were with, and they were had them confused with who was who. And so now we've killed off both sides over 30 years, and I'm thinking maybe it is our responsibility to do some straightening out over there to try to get some development going. What do you
Wait. Well, I, as far as development is concerned, Nora, the best way we could assist in the development of Afghanistan is to get the hell away from it. You're probably correct on about 98% of what you said. It was, and it is this time, another CIA operation. When the Soviet Union decided to invade, the CIA decided to create all that stuff you said and arm Mujahideen, Muslim fighters to go against the Great Satan. At the time, the Great Satan was, the Soviet Union. But as far as our having a responsibility, the only responsibility that we have to Afghanistan is to get out. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe leave great big buckets of money to pay for the damage we did. The only responsibility we have in Iraq is to get the hell out and leave buildings full of money for the damage and the murder and the mayhem we did. You know, nation building, forcing democracy, Western democracy, on people whose manner of living, other than cell phones, hasn't changed in 9 centuries, is arrogant, patronizing, and murderous. And that's exactly what we're doing. I would suggest what I said earlier. Anyone who wants some information on Afghanistan, you can get it a number of places, but try invisiblehistory.com. And you may want to buy a book that's available there called Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold History. But the United States being in Afghanistan makes as much sense or less sense than the Soviets being there 30 years ago. I say less sense because the Soviets were interested in expanding their empire. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, okay. It makes as much sense as the Soviet Union going in there. Oh, well, whatever. Robin is calling from Southern California. Hey, Robin, welcome to the program.
How's it going, Mike?
Hey, fair to partly cloudy. How about you?
Is
California still a political entity? Are you still there?
Well, I'm just trucking through. I don't worry too much about the fact that they're out of money, except for the fact that I have to be a little more careful about my paperwork.
Well, by the way, Robin, thanks for the salmon.
Hey, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Two things that I wanted to talk about, actually, thought of the second one. Did you get my email that I sent you last night?
Probably, but I haven't read a lot of email. I've got 900 of them in my email box, and I just haven't.
The subject line was Rove's Disposition and Smoked Fish. If you like the new recipe better than the old.
I may have. I'm trying to remember. I may have.
And I sent another one right after that, because when I hit send, I looked up in the subject line and it said disposition, not deposition. When do you think we're going to get anything on that? I mean, they had him in there for, I think it was like 9 hours, but they're not giving us any details. What's up with that?
Well, what's up with it? They had Harriet Myers in there in June, June 16th, I believe. I think what's up with it is, first of all, Democrats are cowardly sons of bitches. The Democrats in the House and the Senate are absolute cowards. The only time Nancy Pelosi has shown any backbone or any bravery is when she stood up to this terrorist organization that we all know as the CIA. I have to put you on hold, Robin, because there's a lot of background noise coming through there on your call. As far as what's up with the 10 hours or 8 hours that Rove was in, talking, you know, that's the congressional investigation, quote, into the firing of U.S. attorneys. And that's going to go nowhere. It's going to go nowhere. First of all, the administration that perpetrated this crime, as is the case of all the crimes they perpetrated, is no longer in power. And secondly, or firstly, is the fact that the current administration has no desire whatsoever to pursue the Bush crime family for anything. For anything. Certainly not for the firing of attorneys, because the Obama administration knows as soon as they would begin prosecution or pursuit, then the protection racket that is right-wing talk radio and the filth that is mainstream media would immediately identify this as policy difference being criminalized. In other words, the Bush crime family had a certain idea how to go from A to B. The Obama administration has a different idea how to go from A to B. And the fact that all these crimes were committed is beside the point, because Americans don't understand how they're being blindsided, lied to, and turned into dolts. So, no, nothing's going to happen. I'm sure they all sat in there, and I'm sure Rove and the boys, the Democrats especially, probably sat around, drank, talked about lunch, and then all went home.
Who's our technical advisor? Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Ethical advisors Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, our economic advisor, and the program engineer and executive producer is Catherine Bay. Mike is calling from Boone, North Carolina. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Good.
Yesterday, in a community not unlike where you live in Georgia, here in the mountains of North Carolina, the cops busted a marijuana field of 14,000 plants, estimated worth of $28 million. Upon discovering them, they decided to burn every single one of them. This is in a county with 15% unemployment, a budget deficit, and no economic hope.
Right.
And to me, this is a sign that, you know, the culture war should end. When you're doing that with $28 million worth of anything, when the economy is going so bad, it's a sign of, I don't know what, maybe you could describe it.
Madness?
Yeah.
You know, I've said a million times, a million times that the prohibition against marijuana is insane. The criminalizing of marijuana is insane. I hate to dump on marijuana farmers like this or gardeners like this, but California could solve their budget problem with one crop. All they have to do is just stand back, let the marijuana growers work their magic, and set up state-sponsored stores like the liquor stores in Virginia or PA. I think they're still around in PA.
See, what I was curious was, is there some way that the county officials could have found a way to have sold it on their own to a medical marijuana?
No. In the states where medical marijuana is being used, and that, of course, it's primarily California, even though the state made it legal and the various counties made it legal, the federal government has declared it's illegal. I think the Obama administration has decided to continue prosecutions. They certainly haven't vacated any that I'm aware of. Maybe so. I haven't been following this as closely as I could, as I should. But marijuana happens to be the largest cash crop in the United States. It's just not reported. It's not taxed. It's not in any way being used as a revenue a producer. And also, as a result of all that, we have this horrifying situation in Mexico. The drug cartels, the drug gangs. I realize a lot of that is cocaine, but it's also a lot of it's marijuana. You know, I've been telling friends that still smoke dope. You know, just please try to smoke American Reefer, because if you're smoking, you know, if you sit back and say, "Hey man, here's some Oaxacan gold," what you're doing is fueling and funding death and destruction and terror. And you know, any pothead who does that, to me, is a phony and doing stuff that is just absolutely not righteous and totally counter to what the idea of
sharing a reefer with some adult friends is all about. I mean, that's just my opinion. But as far as North Carolina is concerned, yeah, I spent a lot of time in Love Valley, North Carolina, up above Statesville. And that whole area back in the 70s was known for some of kind of like Northern California where it concerned marijuana growing. And it's a shame that states that are desperately in need of revenue continue to lock people up and throw away millions of dollars just because I don't know why anymore.
Madness.
Why?
It is madness.
Yeah, and North Carolina, and the irony, of course, and I'm sure it's not lost on you, North Carolina is one of the biggest, or was one of the biggest, cancer-producing states in the country with their cigarette industry, their tobacco industry. You know, Winston-Salem,
correct,
North Carolina, all up and down I-85, all the way up into Richmond, Virginia. I mean, it's just Cancer Alley. The tons of cigarettes and death and destruction and illness and sickness produced, and the state has no problem. State of North Carolina has no problem taking money from that.
Oh no, cigarettes are still $3 a pack here.
Yeah, it's
dollars across the country.
It's just insane. It's just insane. But
well, thank you for your time, Mike.
Yeah, all right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate what you had to say, Mike. Yeah, I don't even do marijuana advocacy programs anymore, or at least advocate the absolute decriminalization and making legal of marijuana. What's the point? You know, that has been going on since Harry Anslinger back in, what, the 30s or the 20s, decided that crazed Negroes would smoke marijuana and go rape white women, and therefore it had to be made illegal. Jesus. Well, this has been a fun night, hasn't it? Huh? Everybody had a good time tonight? Really? Let's see. You have to be in court what time tomorrow? Don't say anything about the trial. Don't say a word. But you have to be there when?
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay. That figures.
That early.
All right.
I usually get 5.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah, and now it's down to 3.5.
About 4.5.
Well, but, you know, that's you're young.
I am. Well, compared
to me. Yeah, compared to me. You're damn right you are. Anyway, we will see you tomorrow night. We will try to have some of the sound from that hearing tomorrow. If you get a chance to tune into C-SPAN. Because I doubt seriously.
Do that instead.
Yeah, I doubt seriously if CNN or MSNBC will carry any of it. That's not their function. Their function is not to enlighten or educate. Their function is to make us forget. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Attention.